Maine Congressman Bruce Poliquin tell it, Election Day across Maine's 2nd District was chaotic. Voters confused about how many marks to make on those ballots. Votes fed into a black box with an artificial intelligence choosing the winner. Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz with Maine Public's political correspondents Steve Missler and Mal Leary. Congressman Poliquin, a Republican, is continuing to push back against the ranked choice vote count that Democrat Jared Golden won by some 3,500 votes. Poliquin is demanding a recount. And he's also continuing with a lawsuit that claims using ranked choice voting is unconstitutional. Poliquin also continued to wage a public relations battle against the voting method, thus the talk of confused voters, black boxes, and artificial intelligence. Mal Leary, have you ever heard those kinds of arguments used about an election before?
In terms of in a general election, no, I haven't heard those arguments. But we heard the arguments coming from the Republican Party last spring when they were arguing in state court and in federal court, arguing against ranked choice voting, saying it was unconstitutional and that voters would be confused. I would say, based on talking with some town clerks myself, there might have been a few times when voters were confused, but they were more confused about the fact that ranked choice voting was being used for congressional races, but not the governor's race, which, of course, is a function of the state constitution, which says you can't use ranked choice voting for the governor's race. It has to be done by plurality.
All right. Well, Steve Missler, let's talk about that. Attorneys for Poliquin and the three 2nd District voters who are suing filed some new legal arguments this week. What are they claiming now, and what do they want the judge to do?
The arguments haven't changed all that much, but what they're asking for has. And basically, what they're asking for is for the judge to invalidate the runoff portion of the election. As we all know, Jared Golden won in the runoff portion of the election. They want the judge to get rid of that and basically declare Poliquin the winner because he happened to have a lead going into the runoff portion. Now, I try not to use sports analogies, but this is a little bit like a football team asking the ref to call the game at halftime because they happened to be winning and they ended up losing in the second half. I don't know how a judge would grant something like that, given that they could have challenged this ranked choice voting anytime between the time that we had a ranked choice voting election in the primaries and the November election. They chose not to do that. They chose to do it after the November election, which is a big point that's raised in Golden's case, the Secretary of State's case. They're basically saying it's too late. We've already done this. We've had four candidates, one of whom, Tiffany Bond, one of the independents in the race, said she wouldn't have even have run if there wasn't for ranked choice voting. If it was a straight up plurality election, and she's sent a affidavit to the court affirming that. Now, the arguments that Poliquin's attorneys have made are virtually no different than they made when they were trying to get the judge to halt the Secretary of State's runoff. The only thing that's changed is what he's asking the judge to do. And the judge disassembled a lot of those arguments when he ruled against stopping the runoff.
Mal, let's talk about the recount for a bit. First of all, how long is it going to take? What's it going to cost? Who's going to pay for it?
It's going to take several weeks, according to Secretary of State Matt Dunlap. He's trying to guesstimate what it will cost is somewhere between $75,000 and $100,000. And that's going to have to be paid for by Mr. Poliquin because the margin was greater than the 1% under which the state would then pick up the cost of the recount. When you go through the recount process itself, you have panels of counters from both sides going through each one of these ballots. Mm-hmm. There are over 300,000 of them cast in the 2nd Congressional District. So that just gives you some idea of how long it's going to take, even if they work, you know, 5 days a week, all day long.
Now, it seems like a lot of money, and it kind of suggests that it's not just Congressman Poliquin, but perhaps the Republican Party that wants this outcome changed. And one wonders, why are they pushing so hard for a seat that's not, in the end, going to affect the balance of power in the new House?
I believe that Republicans see ranked choice voting as an existential threat to hardline conservative candidates and their ability to win statewide elections. Now, I think that's one reason why they are fighting this so hard. They have benefited from plurality elections where the Democratic candidate or Democratic opponent and independent or unenrolled candidates split the vote. With ranked choice voting, that doesn't happen. This is basically a campaign against ranked choice voting. You know, I understand why they would do that, frankly. It will make it more difficult for hardline conservative candidates to win. And I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing Poliquin spending his own money, potentially not faring very well in a legal case. He can use this to further polarize the electorate against ranked choice voting. 2 years ago, when Maine voters approved ranked choice voting, most voters were accepting of it. And now you've seen that shift where Republicans are more and more suspicious of it or outright opposed to it, and Democrats are supportive of it. And so I think perhaps going forward, if they ever want to undo this law, they need to keep that split going forward. I don't know when they would have the votes to undo the law because they don't have a majority in the legislature, but maybe they could introduce it through via ballot initiative.
Mm. And part of it's the politics here, Irwin, because we know that supporters of ranked choice voting will try to bring forward a constitutional amendment to have ranked choice voting apply to the two areas it doesn't apply to right now, which is governor and sheriffs. So that's going to come forward, and this will help bolster the Republicans to make sure that they block that, because it takes a two-thirds vote to send a constitutional amendment out to the voters. And I think it's pretty clear that the Republicans in this legislative session are not going to go for the sending out that constitutional amendment.
Yeah. And I suspect, too, that this becomes almost a national issue, because this is the first time it's been used in a congressional election. And presumably, if it survives the legal challenges and the other challenges in this state, one could see other states doing the same.
Well, I think you just hit on a really important point, Irwin, and that's very true. I mean, this group Fair Vote, which has been a big advocate for getting ranked choice voting here in Maine, they're not stopping at Maine. They want to take this to other states. I believe there's some interest in Massachusetts to do this. Minnesota, I believe. This isn't just a Maine issue. It could potentially affect whether other states decide to go forward with this.
Well, let's talk about a slightly simpler election, namely that for the constitutional officers in the state. The electorate is smaller. The vote counting presumably won't take quite as long. But now the Republican Party is taking an interesting approach to these constitutional officer elections. Why don't you tell us what's involved, what are the races, and what are they doing?
Well, we have three constitutional officers up this year. The Attorney General, which arguably is the second most important position in state government after the governor, the State Treasurer, and the Secretary of State. Well, the Republicans are right now not planning to run anyone for any of those three positions. This is not the first time this has happened. They've done it in the past where they've simply said, the numbers aren't there, so why bother? But you still have a race developing in treasurer, where you've got the independent Terry Hayes, who's served two terms now as state treasurer, being elected by a bipartisan majority. She's running again. She says she's got Republicans, Democrats, and independents that support her. So she will be nominated, and she'll be going up against the presumptive Democratic nominee, Henry Beck. He has no opposition for the Democratic nomination. And the numbers clearly are stacked for the Democrat. And then, more interesting, because of its importance to so many policy areas, is the Attorney General. Republicans aren't running anyone. But there are five Democrats running. And they're all jockeying to get the votes of a majority of the Democrats. Because once they're nominated, they should have the votes, because there's no Republican nominee. They move on to that post, which, as many folks argue, is so very important to policy. As we saw with Janet Mills in her battles with Paul LePage and the Trump administration. And every one of the candidates I've talked to on the Democratic side for Attorney General bring up the need to try to join with other states and hold back Trump on some of his efforts to, for example, roll back environmental regulations. So you have this interesting and very unique way that we elect these folks. It's the legislature, the 186 members who actually, meeting in joint convention, elect these three posts. That is unique. No other state does that. Most states elect these positions or appoint them by the governor with the confirmation of the state senate in those particular states. And then is Tennessee, I believe, which has another very unique way where the Supreme Court actually elects the Attorney General for an 8-year term. Overwhelmingly, these posts in other states are elected by the voters or by the governor and confirmed by the state Senate.
So how does this actually work, Mal, when it gets to the legislature? Will the legislators do this in open session? Will they do it by secret paper ballot? How do they actually make these decisions?
They do have open partisan caucuses to make nominations. So there will be speeches and seconding speeches almost ad nauseum in the Democratic caucus because you've got 5 candidates running for Attorney General. When you get through all of those, then they have to start casting ballots because there has to be a majority of the Democrats in their caucus to nominate someone. And we don't know what the magic number is because it depends on who's actually there and casting a ballot on the day of the joint caucus, which is Tuesday. So once that process goes through, we virtually have elected the Attorney General as a Democrat, but then we have to go through the actual joint convention, which is held after the legislature organizes Wednesday morning. The joint convention is held in the afternoon, where it takes 94 votes, a flat majority of the 186 lawmakers, to say this person is elected to these 3 posts. Now, Secretary of State Matt Dunlap's running without opposition. You know, the state treasurer's race, we do have a race. The Attorney General will be determined by the Democratic caucus. So we have some interest going on here, but nowhere near what we've seen in the past when there's been some very close races with the legislature much more evenly balanced. In this case, the Democrats have just such overwhelming numbers that even with some Democrats deserting, so to speak, it's going to take a lot of Democrats to desert for the Democratic nominee not to win.
By the way, the Attorney General's race, it's also worth noting, because this is true in other states too, but in the 40 years that I've been here, Janet Mills is now the 2nd Attorney General to be moving up into the governor's mansion. And the last one, of course, was Joe Brennan in 1978.
That's correct. Others have not been so successful.
Gentlemen, thank you both very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. Have questions about politics for Mal, Steve, or me? Send them our way. You can find us on Twitter and the Maine Public website. We air abbreviated versions of Maine's Political Pulse Fridays on Morning Edition, or listen for our extended conversations here on the Maine Political Pulse podcast. We post it Friday afternoons. You can stream it from our website, mainepublic.org, download it from there, or from wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer is Willis Ryder Arnold. Music is from Rob Holt. For Maine Public, I'm Erwin Gratz.